You are listening to the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, episode 252. The master plan is to get a shave and marry a supermodel. Welcome to season 6, episode 252 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is July the 24th, 2016. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and reporting live from Comic-Con is my brother, James Furlough.
Yeah, I'm dressed up, ready to go. It's a wild event. The trailer for the new, oh my gosh, what is it called? Justice League? It was pretty good. I thoroughly enjoyed that and glad I got the sneak peek and that no one else in the world could see it. And that's not true at all. Everyone saw it.
Trying to get everybody to forget about how real bad Batman vs. Superman was.
Which you'll notice, which, I mean, it makes sense because Superman's dead, that it's really just Batman.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because it's like, I actually like Batman vs. Superman, at least watching it once. I'm not sure I could sit through the 7 hours of watching it again, but the first time I saw it, I thought it was enjoyable. But yeah, it's not done. Like the critical acclaim and excitement around it was pretty spent. So it was Wonder Woman trailer came out, Justice League trailer came out, and people were shocked by them and their tone, and it was clearly
they were.
Yeah, because there hadn't been even a hint of these trailers, either trailers coming out.
Oh.
You know, they knew there was going to be a panel. They thought maybe you'd get like some some pictures, maybe some behind the scene footage, but nothing like a full blown trailer. And so to get two full blown trailers for these movies was, yeah, a pretty huge surprise. And almost as importantly, especially because it's so far out, but almost as importantly, they're both. The tone was a lot lighter than...
Yeah, I noticed that, actually. There was some joking-ish. Yeah. I didn't see the Wonder Woman one. I'm going to have to look that up more now.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Okay. Yeah, it kind of... I bet behind the scenes they're like, let's roll these things fast. Let's get these going and move on, which is a bummer, but...
Yeah.
That's okay. Cool. Hey, I noticed you're growing out your beard there.
Yes.
It's kind of getting large.
It's getting
any
big.
Any particular reason?
I sport beards of varying lengths over the course of my life. Pretty much since I was old enough to sport peach fuzz, I was trying to grow a beard. And this latest bout of letting it grow... It's kind of started as I was letting it grow out, and I kind of liked what was going on, and it's getting longer, and I liked it, but it wasn't too long, and then the Warriors started there, and this was like Warriors deep in the season, and then the Warriors started their, amazing, nearly get kicked out, and then somehow win, progress, and so I started growing out my playoff beard. Like a month early, and then just kept it through the entire playoffs, which NBA playoffs seem to take like a year and a half. They're so long. So there was an entire... So this like goes back months, and then...
I'm surprised you didn't shave it the last game.
Yeah, well, I was literally in Cabo, and I was so heartbroken. I didn't want to think about anything when it came to like basketball or what I was doing. And I like having the beard, and so it just sort of like, it stuck for an extra week, then I didn't shave when I get back, and and now it's like we're gearing up to go to Boston, and I don't know, it's one of those things where it's like, I'm pretty sure by the time, like, every time I'm like, I should trim it, or shave it, or do something, like, something comes up, and people are like, no, keep it, and... I like beards a lot, so I don't need much encouragement. But it's just kind of the continual casual encouragement. So I'm at this point, I figure I'm just pre-gaming for No Shave November. And
well, it's almost like in the last week it's tipped into the ooh, that's big.
that's awesome. Yeah. I don't know. Bring in the 30s with the giant beard. The other thing is I got the marathon at the end of August, and I like having a beard for big athletic events. I'm not sure why, but it just makes it seem more like
So the sweat dollops are coming off of it. It just seems
exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Then like a month and a half after that, I've got a Tough Mudder, so I'll have to keep it for that.
Totally. Yeah.
It's going to be 2017
before I have to... and Christmas photos. Yep.
Exactly. I got a wedding that I got to... I will probably get it trimmed before the wedding in the middle of October. But just like... But just shaped. Like
I understand. Yeah, get rid of the scragglies. I understand.
Exactly. But...
Cool.
Man. Oh, man. Did I tell you about... So, have you... you know what? I can't actually... trying to think. I have to be a little... I have to hesitate. Sorry. We'll have to... There's some family... There's stuff going on that only our family would care about, but our family would really care about. And so, And since enough of our family actually listen to this show, I feel like I need to not talk about it. But if you're family and you want to know, just give me a holler.
DM me.
Exactly. We'll talk about it.
All right. Yeah, because we're not here to talk about family matters, are we?
Yeah, no, James, we're not. This week, we're not going to talk about family stuff. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations, dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get to the heart of the show, James got a short disclosure he's going to throw our way.
Yeah, first we have to apologize, like nothing happened this week, so we're just going to make up news.
Yeah, right. So
just going to deal with that. And second of all, I founded and work for Hewlett-Packard Inc. However, I do not represent HP or any of HPI's opinions. I also own a massive part of Twitter, Etsy, and Lending Club.
Nice. So my disclosure is I'm still a shareholder of... Skull Candy Incorporated, common stock. I haven't figured out... My goal last week was to figure out what to do with my stock, and I didn't.
Yeah, speaking of, I am level 5 now, so I held my commitment. Team Blue.
Oh.
There's a gym near my house that's blue.
So, you can win the gym. It doesn't stay blue. It's whoever's
really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Clearly, I'm still a noob.
Mystics are the worst. I hate Team Mystic, man. They're not noob.
Well, who are you?
I'm Instinct, obviously.
Oh.
Team Instinct.
Okay. Oh, all right.
I really enjoy the idea that when there's nothing but arbitrary color differences, how much everybody if there was like a legitimate difference in like tactics that came along with picking a team and yes. You know, and like,
well, they make it seem like there is
different. There's you, from everything I can tell,
I'm pretty sure there's none.
There's just, it's just written text. It's pick color. And
yeah,
but like in video games where there's a big following and like picking a clan or picking like a route, there's distinct like ability differences. There's some like, you know, rabble and rousing between the different groups, but when it's just a color, just pick a color, for whatever reason, the anger, the vitriol, and the divisiveness like just comes out to play. And in the last like week, I've seen so many people like Team Mystic will bathe in the blood of their enemies, like just,
oh my gosh,
over the top. This is...
That's awesome.
This is really funny.
I did have someone come up to me this week who was like, they're like, your wife's name is Jessie, right? It's like, yeah. They're like, and you know, like Pokemon Go's a thing, right? It's like Team Rocket. Like, yeah.
That's pretty funny.
Yep, funny. I'm aware of that. Yeah. I had, what was this other dude? Oh my gosh. All right. So I had this guy, he was working on my house, and, Jesse had come over, introduced her. It was like the next day. He was on a ladder painting. Middle of the day, okay?
Yeah.
And he starts laughing. Just laughing his head off. I'm like, you okay, man? Like, what's so funny? He goes, Jesse James, that's so awesome. Wow. Quite the lag.
That's,
oh, man. That's, he goes, yeah, I just got it. I just know you were thinking about us while painting, but that's cool.
I can just, you know, it's funny because, like, I feel like anybody that's ever known you has gone through that, like, that thought process at some point where they're like, yeah, Jesse and James. Hey! That's funny.
Well, like, a lot of times when we introduce ourselves, but, oh, yeah, I'm James and this is Jesse. And I'll go, but I'll say, it's easier the other way around, Jesse James. And
nice.
And I just bring it right up, and usually people, like, they instantly, oh yeah, I got it, and then they actually memorize our names. But
that's clever.
Give them all the time. But
give them an anchor. I got it. Now, you know, it's funny. You remember one of our uncles' name's Christopher, and he ended up marrying a robin, and our grandma was so excited because it's Christopher Robin.
Oh man, that's awesome.
Oh man, it's funny how some things work out. Yeah, so you know what? If you want to follow us throughout the week when we do stuff, post pictures, tweet thoughts, we're on the social media. I'm at Matthew D. Frillo is my Twitter. Instagram is my NextWigan4.
Oh, I am James Frillo on Twitter. .com, elsewhere, like Instagram, I guess.
Nice. Also, furthebros.com is where you can go for the rest of all this good stuff. All the articles and links that we talk about are going to be there at the website, top of the fold. Just go and check it out. Also, if you want that delivered to your email, we can do that. We got a weekly newsletter. Send it directly to you.
And send email, yes.
It's pretty awesome. So, I'm just going to get this right out of the way. I finally got to do it. I got to try the HTC Vive.
So is it the best?
So, I would say the visual aspect of the Oculus is better.
Really?
There's the blurring at the outer edges of your vision. You kind of get a little bit more blur with the. The Vive and the level of textures and stuff, it looked better on the Oculus, and I thought the Oculus felt a little bit better on my head. That being said, literally everything else was better. Like the fullness of the experience, because number one, so I went to the Microsoft store to try it out, and they, like, you walk in and they have this, like, roped off area. You're allowed to walk around in, which is really cool. And it's got a barrier set up so you can just, as you, like, get close to the digital barrier. So as you get close to the rope or, like, the glass wall, because you have you right, do it right in front of the store, like, you get this big green wall that's like, don't go any further.
Oh, that's convenient. That's nice.
Yeah. And then the handheld pieces are great. Just really good. Like they feel very, very much like the right size, right location, right. And like one of the experiences that was kind of cool is there's a little gap over the bridge of your nose. It's supposed to let air out so that you don't steam up the glass, the lenses.
Yeah.
And so you could see, just if you look over the bridge of your nose, you could see out just a little bit. And if you held the controller right, you could see the controller over the bridge of your nose in real life and the digital version of it. And it looked continuous. So it's really, it's pretty good. and so from that perspective, the controller is really neat. Walking around in that space was really cool. They have like a demo thing where you just said like sitting underwater, and that was where I felt like the Oculus shined, because they have a similar types of demos where you're just standing in an area, looking around, experiencing it. And I thought it looked better on the Oculus, but the next thing that I did was a painting app, where one of your controllers is your brush, and you pull the trigger to like lay down paint. But the thing is, it's it
like
it
knows in a house or spray painting or like
no. See, this is what's cool is you just it's in 3D space. So like if I hold my finger out it and I start painting, it just hangs there in space. So you can draw like you can draw like 3D objects. You can walk away from it. You can walk around it. And they have different paintbrushes and styles and stuff. And I thought that was super neat. I could see doing that, and especially kids. I think it's especially when I think of that in context of like modeling something, whether you're creating a, you know, whether you're somebody who's doing modeling for movies or games or just like digital modeling for whatever, art type stuff, that'll be super useful to be in that area with the model. But I can see for me, like as an engineer, if I could do 3D models for like what we're working on, and I could build it in 3D space, manipulate it really easily, then my boss can just slip on a headset and all of a sudden he's in that same space and he can see it and look at it and point stuff out. I sit there and I go, that's when it gets really exciting to me, and I can see it being really fun. And then the last piece of it was the last demo was you're standing on the roof of a building, and these little drones are coming up and shooting lasers at you. You got to shoot them out of the sky, and you get two guns, one for each hand. And I find that you're better off pointing both guns at the drone so that you have like a better shot of hitting. But to me, I instinctively wanted to give myself cover fire and shoot at the drones I couldn't see. And I'm like, once again, I feel like once you actually get into like multiplayer games where the other player sees and reacts to you shooting at them, even if you're not aiming directly at them, that'll have some serious consequences for video game play, which I think will be pretty fun. But yeah, it's just, it's awesome. It's cool stuff.
So now you've tried all three
of
the main players.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, let's just pretend you've got enough money to buy one. Like, which one would you go for today?
HTC. HTC really? Vive. Yeah. And I think it's going to be really important for the graphics to get better over time. But that, to me, is I've always thought that video game graphics are secondary to gameplay. It's what can I do with this system? And I just feel like you can do more with the HTC. It's got a much broader palette for which programmers can develop for. And also what I talked about when I tried out the Oculus was just the idea of peripheral support. The idea that there are other things, other devices that go along with this primary device that are just as important, if not more important sometimes, to the overall experience. I thought that HTC does a much better job than Oculus and at that sort of stuff. So
okay. So what's your second then?
Jeez.
Oculus and Sony, right?
Yeah. That would be really tough. Because
the Vive is just that much better. It's an obvious first, huh?
Yeah. It's the wow. big difference. Well, the thing is that I think that the PlayStation is a runner up on overall experience, but it doesn't, you can't walk around the hand controllers. Like I haven't actually gotten to use those, but I don't imagine they'll be as good just because of what they're using for the hand controllers. So it's just, it's one of those things where overall it's great for playing games, but the overall visuals are going to be worse. And I don't know, James. It's just
fair enough.
It's tough. It's tough for to know where the. I think if you just want to get into it and you want to make sure that you get something that'll be supported for a long time, you're probably better off going with the PlayStation VR and going that route for at least the next year or two, because it'll be well supported for at least I would guess 3 or 4 years. And although there'll be a lot better stuff, coming out in 3 or 4 years, you'll still have support for it as a platform. And I just think that, whereas I think that definitely like Oculus with Facebook, they're going to want to keep chasing the next best thing. And in 3 or 4 years, the original Oculus will be completely ignored.
Yeah.
For whatever the next best thing is. Which is okay for the overall market, but as an early adopter, you'll be like, if you're not willing to keep coughing up a couple hundred bucks every year to get the latest best model.
And you're not?
I'm not sure. Right? Well, I might be, but like I said,
eBay for
but yeah,
your old one.
So I don't know.
Okay.
Cool. Definitely interesting. Glad I did it. Glad I checked it out.
Okay. Too bad. Awesome.
Broke as a joke. Going with the PlayStation.
So I want to give a quick smart home update.
Okay.
So I'm living the dream. Finally. So I got my August smart lock all set up.
Ooh.
And I got my doorbell all set up. Now, ooh, it turned out it was a little bit of an issue, and it's not for the faint of heart, turned out. Like,
yeah.
Almost none of these are in retrospect. So got my doorbell hooked up into the wall. Life's good. Doorbell rings. But nothing else happens. And they tell you, like, you got to wait 30 minutes, let the battery charge, and then you go up to the wireless network, and life's great. So I wait the 30 minutes, try to do it to the wireless network. It's not going to let me. It doesn't seem to be actually turning on or holding a charge. Very weird. And so I start doing some more research, and it turns out that the doorbell requires somewhere between 16 and 24 volts of power to work.
Mm-hmm.
And using a multimeter, which I just so happen to have, mine's only throwing off 10 volts of power.
Okay.
Not quite enough. So I'm like, okay, great. So I then start to do some research. Turns out that doorbells have a middleman called a transformer, an awesome name, that takes the 120, the normal, transforms it somehow down to, well, in my case, 10.
Yeah.
And then sends that along to the button and to the actual bell itself, because I guess it just doesn't need the 120 for some reason. They just said it was easier to put in a transformer than to just have it accept 120. But whatever.
Do you want to know why?
Yeah, why?
Because 10 volts can't hurt you. And it's probably it sounds like
switches.
What?
Light switches take 120, don't they?
Yeah, they do, but those take all sorts of different, that has all sorts of different legal requirements and regulations on it, whereas 10 volts, everything below 24 volts is considered, 24 volts and below is considered low voltage, and it's a completely different realm of regulation, huh, because it can't start fires, it can't hurt people, it can't, like, so you can just kind of willy-nilly throw 24 volts all over the place, and it depends on what sort of a transformer you have, but that's the biggest reason why they do it. It also drives a lot more current, but that's, you kind of get into transformers, how they work is they basically take a high voltage, low current source and turn it into a low voltage, super high current source, and using metal or magnetic induction. There are different reasons why you would do that. If you needed more current or you needed a safer voltage, you could do that. And that would benefit you. But
so I ended up crawling through my attic crawl space.
Yeah.
And I also crawled under my house because of my doorbell's underneath the window. So I was like, there's a possibility here. Let me just crawl under the house. I think it's easier to verify that there are no actual electrical wires. It turns out it was up in the attic and underneath a whole bunch of insulation. And I kind of got lucky that I found it, to be honest, because we went to where I knew the doorbell ringer thing was.
Yeah.
And went, okay, it's got to be somewhere around here. It was my thought. Where I was at least like, let me find the wire where that goes to and trace it. And then when I found the wire, it turned out it was just right on top of it. I was like, oh, all right.
Nice.
Cool beans. It was super funny. I was up there And I kind of knew where I was oriented, and I called Jesse on my phone. I was like, hey, where's the doorbell actually located? Like, here's where I'm at. I can see this. How close is it to that? And she goes, oh, well, it's like 2 feet over. I'm like, okay, I'm to like 2 feet over. Yeah, it turned out my hand was resting right on top of it while I was talking to her on the phone. pretty funny. So I found it, went to Home Depot, got a new transformer that got at me at least 16 volts, replaced it, which was, you know, fairly straightforward. And then once I did that, yep, doorbell instantly started working and charging and gave me the whole shebang. It's pretty awesome. So you press the button and it obviously dings on the inside still, but then it does like a ringtone type of thing for the door press because it's waiting for me to respond on my phone.
Wow.
To say, oh, hey, and I can see, I get a little notification and then I can flip it and I get a picture of who it is. It's a, like a video feed of them. And then if I want to, I can push to talk to be like, hey, what do you want?
What's your deal?
And I can unlock the door from right there as well, which is kind of cool.
It's so, very cool.
Super fun. And because I installed that, I can now tap Siri and say, lock my front door. And guess what it does? Locks my front door. Super exciting. The other thing, the intrepidation continued. I got the Lyric Round thermostat that's made by Honeywell. So I'm ditching the Nest. And so I got that now because it is also HomeKit awesomeness. And so I took off the old one, which had a big square or a big rectangle plate on it. And it turned out underneath it was not finished at all.
Oh, of course.
It was super gross. I was like, oh, come on. Well, it just so happened that I had some extra mud from the old house, from doing the house project. So I went and remudded it, retextured it, repainted it, made it look nice as best as I could to fit in. And then ended up having to take a metal cover plate and had to refashion it to make it flat. And so it would lay flat up against the remaining hole that was there because it had a little gang box that was there. And then I had to drill / use my Dremel to get a circle to allow the cord to come in because on the circular new faceplate that comes with Honeywell, it's not right in the middle. It's offset. So I couldn't just use the one where like bang out the half inch hole. I'm like, oh, for crying out loud. So I did that. And so now that is installed. And the best part is I have a heat pump. And so there's like two extra wires there. I'm like,
great.
What do I do with these? Now what is cool about it though? So I'm like, I'm doing research online. I'm like, okay, what does the green wire do? And I'm trying to find all this stuff and I figure out what it is. Well, finally, CNET gets a ton of credit for this. They're like, you want to know how you do it? Like, you use the app to install your thermostat. So I'm like, okay. So I grab the app and it tells you, take it out of the box and do all this stuff. And then it says, okay, for your existing thermostat, here they have a whole list. They're like, what's the letter and the color that goes with it? And so I'm like, okay. And I'm just typing them all in and doing it. And they had every single combination you could think of, which was cool. I get done and they go, okay, are you sure? Because this isn't like a standard wiring. Like, yeah, I'm sure. Like,
yeah.
And then the next, I don't know, you guys, it's another Honeywell. I don't know. But anyways, I hit the next screen and it goes, here's how you want to hook up all your wires. And it was interesting because one of them, which was the one that was throwing me off, they had it going somewhere else. And I was like, oh, yeah, I wouldn't have guessed that. And so that was super cool. And I was like, oh, man, it's nice with these smart things because the August doorbell cam was the same way where it started off and it was like, they gave you a little installation book and it's like, go to this URL.
Yeah. Go online.
Because they make the assumption you have a smartphone, which like totally makes sense. And then it starts off and it says, okay, how close is your doorbell to the door? What's the orientation of it relative to your door? What's the siding type of your door? And then based on that, they say, okay, here are the pieces that you actually want to use that were included in a box, and here's the instruction manual to do them. So like for me, I had to put on a wedge. And they're like, because mine was so close to the door, like you want the angle. And because you're using wood, you don't have to use the dollies. You could just go straight into it. I was like, wow, that's actually kind of sweet to be able to have these things. And very personalized instructions.
Right.
So the Lyric is set up. It's working. I can't get Siri to recognize it. And I don't know why. It's really, really annoying. It keeps saying, can't find the device, sorry. I'm like, well, don't, just find it, it's there, trust me, or something.
And tried turning everything off and on again.
Yeah. So the other really frustrating part is I go to Honeywell's site, and every single one of their pages for help stuff is a 404.
So that's really crazy.
So I'm like, looking at the cached pages, it's almost like they did a website change, and someone messed up the canonical URLs, and no one recognized it. It's kind of like that's what happened. Or they had some sort of HT access file change that they didn't, I don't know. It's super weird. But thankfully, Google caches everything, and so I can just look at the cached version and read it, because it's all there. So I haven't figured that one out yet. That's kind of annoying. I'm really hoping that, like, when Apple does their update, and I have the Home app, or the HomeKit app, I'll be able to see it.
Right. Because
here's the other one. Updates keep going. It was a big week. I got my new light switches.
Ooh.
Mail. Yeah, yeah. So it's the Lutron. They're Casita, I think is how it's pronounced. It has a little, like, the little hyphen thing over the E. So I'm like, Casita.
Accento.
Anyways. Accento. So I got the bridge for that. And the bridge recognizes the lyric. So I'm like, okay, well, clearly something's working. I don't know what. It does not recognize my doorbell, though, or my lock. So I'm like, okay, great. So I got part of it. But anyways, I have set up 4 light switches. So I got the bedroom, hallway, the entrance, and one of the kitchen lights set up so far. And that, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's super cool. So I literally could just be like, hey Siri, it's probably gonna work right now. Yeah, it just did. I could tell it, turn off all the lights, and it would totally do it.
That's awesome.
I created a new scene called Bedtime that takes all the lights and dims them down to 25%.
Yeah.
And then I have another scene that's called Goodnight. That's called Goodnight, and then it just turns off all the lights, which is super sweet. So I'm super excited for it's so weird. I'm glad that Apple's coming out with their own app thing, because like I want to set up triggers. For example, I want it to where when my lock unlocks, I would like the entrance light to turn on.
Yeah.
Right? That sounds reasonable. And I don't know how to do it. Apparently, there's a $15 app out there that I can buy that has, they're like a third-party app that's figured it all out. I'm like, well, yeah, that's cool. But
I feel like that's something you should be able to do with If This Then That.
Yeah, the issue with them is they're not going to be fast enough.
Right.
Something that reacts, you know, not 20 minutes later. So... And I can't tell if my... So the other nice part about the lyric is that it uses my phone to tell me where I'm at. But I turned it on my iPad. And so I think it thinks I'm always home.
Yeah.
So it never goes into away mode. I'm like,
that doesn't
do any good. Do I have to turn that off? So yeah, so there's a bunch of little like weird subtleties that I'm still... working through and trying to figure out, and still no garage door option, so I'm holding off on that, though Jessie's like, that's like the one thing she wants, so go figure. I'm trying to think, you know, I'm also very much like, I get the Amazon Echo now,
yeah,
because it would be super sweet to just be able to go, well, I guess I just did it, and maybe if I update when I update to a new iPhone and I can just say, hey Siri, and it will just work, maybe that'll be less of a big deal. But just that idea of not having to reach over to a phone or a tablet or anything, just be able to speak out loud.
Yeah.
And then have it respond to you, like that's going to be pretty sweet. I totally see that as that next step in the future, and it's going to be awesome. I even found myself, I can't help it, like looking into the Sonos system. You're like, oh man, wouldn't this be awesome? But Yeah, but I'm like, I would think I would only do it if it had microphones for every single one of the speakers that was listening for you. So that's the next thing I want. So I'm kind of like, man, Google's totally going to come out with that. It's going to be awesome. And I'm going to be like, oh, I wish I had that. But yeah, I'm kind of hoping that Apple's got something up their sleeve in whenever they do it, October, September, to...
Yeah.
I doubt it, which...
You know, it's funny. That brings me back to something I wanted to mention. So I went to the Microsoft store to check out the HTC Vive, and at Westfield, the Microsoft store is directly across the walkway from the Apple store. It's the first time, I think, in maybe years that I've gone into the Microsoft store just to goof off and look at stuff and didn't go into the Apple store, because it's just like,
huh,
what would be in there for me? They're really boring me right now. That's not a good sign. I mean...
Well, this is, they go through this stuff, right? There was that one article that was talking about how, oh no, they're not selling as many iPhones and their Apple Watch sales are declining. And like, well, yeah, this happens every single time. Like, at least the last 4 years, this has been the cycle, because they backload everything and they don't spread anything out, and which I think is a mistake. But
yeah,
here I am. So I've got four installed. I have six more to go. And I think I'll be very happy with it. I have to change out a couple more gang boxes because the way they set them up is kind of dumb. So I gotta make some of those changes. So it's a little more intense. But when it's done, I'll be like, set it all up. Lights will be good. And then I'm also really hoping that, I think it's Chamberlain, that's who I'm banking on, is going to come out with a garage door when Apple updates their HomeKit stuff. I'm kind of hoping, because they've announced that they're going to do it, just haven't yet. So we're going to pull that trigger. And I'm trying to think, what other home automation stuff is there?
So you can always get a Raspberry Pi and do stuff yourself.
Maybe. Okay, all right. Okay, let's say, because I do want to do some Internet of Things projects. So let's say I did want to do that. Like, what's an example?
What are your options?
Something.
So yeah. I got something kind of cool to show you. You're going to be super impressed by these. So this is my thumb next to one of these microprocessors.
Okay.
Smaller than my thumb.
They're very
small. This whole thing, these are two of them. Each one of these is a microcontroller and a Wi-Fi module baked in. It's got 4 GPIO and the ability to connect to Wi-Fi, and you can program it directly. So, like, this can be the heart of your entire Internet of Things device. You can set it up for Wi-Fi, and you can talk to your hubs and stuff, which is pretty cool. I brought up the Raspberry Pi mostly because this week I was working on getting my Raspberry Pi connected to the internet. And thankfully, like, I was just going for it. Just, I wanted to be able to test it out. And essentially what I wanted to be able to do is, it's called SSH, which is when you have Linux, it's a way to basically open up a terminal, a secure terminal, on any other computer connected to it. And what's nice about that is that once you're in the terminal, you can literally do anything with it. And... I was not thinking, because I was trying to get it port forwarded through my router, so you could literally anywhere in the world, anywhere with internet access, I could get into my router, and I was get to my router into the Raspberry Pi, but I didn't even change the Raspberry Pi's wife or password from like the default password or set up any other security stuff, and I was having some struggles, like, figuring out what to do with it. My router wasn't working right, so I just kind of was, like, Googling around, and I found this thread, which they were talking about. They're like, yeah, before you do that, make sure to change your password to, like, a strong password. And then the next person was like, yeah, and don't forget to set up, like, these security things so that people can't, like, do multiple attempts and just brute force your password. Oh, yeah, and do this, and set up this. And, like, six of them down.
Oh, geez.
I'm like, I actually started thinking about, like, what I was trying to give access to, but my Raspberry Pi has access to literally everything inside of my network. and it can ping anything. It can look for anything else on the network. So right now, my router acts as like a secure wall for the rest of the world. Like you'd have to get into my, you'd have to break my router, and then you'd have access to the rest of the stuff on our network. But with my Raspberry Pi, you just would have access to everything. Also, I had you'd have the password, like the admin password, so you could do literally anything on my Raspberry Pi. And they were like, and people were talking about how, like, yeah, there are script kiddies out there that just run scripts all days, hitting literally every available IP address, looking for specifically Raspberry Pis that are open to the internet via SSH. And as soon as they find one, they try the default password. And if it doesn't have the default password, then they start brute forcing it. And once they have access to your Raspberry Pi, they have the keys to the castle. They literally have everything on your network. I was like, ooh, that's a... Okay, maybe I won't do that. it's one of those, like, the reason I bring it up is because it's, you know, we hear a lot about how the Internet of Things is a security nightmare. And I don't think about it very often because you kind of trust these big companies for better or worse that, well, they got engineers. They know more than me. And just kind of trying to shotgun it on my own and put it together and all of a sudden, like, getting halfway through and realizing, wait a second. what am I doing? And realizing how easy it is to be incredibly vulnerable incredibly quickly. But, yeah. You know who does feel vulnerable too, James?
Well, I was going to say, I think my next step, you know, or all these things that I'm doing, it would be nice to, because eventually I'm going to have to redo my roof. It's just going to happen. It would be nice to switch everything over to solar as well. It would be super nice. So I think in, like, I don't know, probably in the next year or two, I'm going to start researching what my solar options are. Ooh. To integrate with my house.
Well, there's one option.
Yeah, is there?
There's
your segue.
Thank you. I liked it. So Elon Musk this week announced what his master plan part due is. And
that guy.
I know, he's such a dork. But so he had a master plan that he wrote 10 years ago, and it's now in its final stages of completion. It was all that it wasn't all that complicated and basically consisted of point one, create a low-volume car, which would necessarily be expensive. Point two, use that money to develop a medium-volume car at a lower price. Point three, use that money to create an affordable, high-volume car. And point four, provide solar power. No kidding, this has literally been on our website for 10 years.
I love that guy.
Yeah, I know. So he kind of goes into...
You could just tell, like, there's a few things that... I know HP, so I'm going to comment on them. Like, there's stuff that's written, and you're like, I wonder if the executive even read it. Just to check it. You know what I mean? Where you just like, I'll hear them talk, and I'm like, this is not their voice. And it's so corporate speak. You can tell that they had some other admin person or something try to, some other dude write it, and they made it sound all...
Wrote it. Yeah.
Yeah, something or other. Whereas like this, you're like, I could totally see he wrote this.
Yeah. Somebody else might have edited it and gone through it, and legal might have taken a look. But
you can tell someone else added the last part. They're like, you have to add this along. I'm sorry. He's like, fine, whatever. Put big lines underneath it and then add that part.
Yeah. Yeah, the very bottom, the disclosure. Yeah. Yeah. So basically he's talking about what is next for Tesla. What's this? What's the master plan? So the big point number one is, here's what we want to do to make that. The next plan step in this is they want to integrate energy and storage.
So he says, he kind of, his preamble, it says, by definition, we must at some point achieve a sustainable energy economy, or we will run out of fossil fuels to burn and civilization will collapse. Given that we must get off fossil fuels anyway, and that virtually all scientists agree that dramatically increasing atmospheric and oceanic carbon levels is insane, the faster we achieve sustainability, the better. So here's their next plan to make that sustainability come sooner.
Yeah, his...
Continue.
He's so awesome.
Again, you can tell he totally wrote it.
Yeah. So they want to integrate energy generation and storage. We can't do this well if Tesla and SolarCity are different companies, which is why we need to combine and break down the barriers inherent to being different separate companies. That they are separate at all, despite similar origins and pursuits of the same overarching goal of sustainable energy, is largely an accident of history. Now that Tesla is ready to scale Powerwall and SolarCity is ready to provide highly differentiated solar, the time has come to bring them together. Like, okay, cool.
Boom.
So this is the justification of the big master plan for SolarCity that everybody was kind of questioning. And I remember back when we talked about it, I mentioned the fact that, like, to Elon, it's not a business deal. To Elon, it's about saving humanity. This is the goal. It's not, does this make sense financially? It's, no, we need to do this. It's worth losing everything to take the risk to try to make this happen. And we can't fail, because then life on Earth, human life on Earth ends. So let's give it our best shot. Like, wow, when you put it like that, you do kind of get the impetus to try to make it succeed.
Yeah, but he totally does. Like you said, he announced it, clearly got the reaction from everybody, and went, okay, I have to explain the broader context for why I'm doing this.
Yeah.
And it totally makes sense. Yeah, because then having a power wall, you're like, dude, that thing's built for solar power. Why? I don't understand. And I got the connection. Like, they make awesome batteries for their car, so let's make awesome batteries for the house. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that integrates. I mean, I've looked into SolarCity, and their method is kind of interesting. The idea of being able to... It doesn't cost you anything up front, and then you just have a fixed cost for the next 20 years, which is kind of cool. I like the idea. I don't know. I'm into it.
Yeah. So, I agree. So that was like a brief blurb specifically about SolarCity, and then it gets back into the whole cars. So, what's the deal with cars? So, first, they want to expand to cover the major forms of terrestrial transportation. So far, they're doing sedans and SUVs and roadsters and all that sort of stuff. A future compact SUV and a new kind of pickup truck. We plan to address most of the consumer market. A lower cost vehicle than the Model 3 is unlikely to be necessary because of the third part of the plan described below, which will get interesting. He does talk about he wants to build an all-electric truck, which I've been advocating for a long time. Doesn't anybody build like a semi specifically?
Yes. Yeah, because he does say apparently this low-end one, the frame will also work to be a truck, like a pickup truck.
Right.
Which is kind of cool. I didn't know that, but that's exciting.
Well, yeah, I mean, honestly, what they're saying is that there's very little difference at this point between the drivetrain for the current Model S and Model X and the Model 3. Like, so much of the engineering, there's a couple of differences in what you get, but a lot of the pricing differentiation is what makes it a, quote, luxury car. But the actual performance of the drivetrain is going to be similar. And so, why not make it available for trucks as well? But for this semi that they're working on, they're talking full-on transportation. And I think it's really cool because it's, like I said, it's everything I've been talking about and saying we need to get going. Number one, an all-electric drivetrain makes a tremendous amount of sense from the power-torque ratio perspective. Like, they're going to be great for hauling incredibly large loads in ways that will be much more efficient and use a lot less energy than normal diesel
gas
trucks.
Yeah.
And that's not just that's not like a throwaway statement that, because in the consumer market, you say something like that and it doesn't really mean much, but in the commercial transportation, that's everything. Like, how much does everything cost? How much does each mile cost? And just getting up to speed, it's going to cost you less money and you can haul bigger loads, which is a big deal. Not to mention, slowing down has the exact opposite effect, where when you hit on the brakes, the first thing it does is it engages recuperative braking before it engages the more powerful brakes. So you're recharging the batteries. And so a lot of the places where you get huge losses of efficiencies in transportation that are only made up by the huge amount of cargo you carry, an all-electric drivetrain has major advantages, not to mention the fact that all the other technology that they've been building into their automated driving and assisted driving for safety reasons and everything. So it'll be a much smarter drivetrain, which is pretty cool. But and to me, the only question becomes, I've always thought that you needed to build some sort of a hybrid situation where it's an all-electric drivetrain and it has a gas tank and a diesel generator so that the long hauling, because that's the thing, is these trucks are designed to drive 8 hours a day, 8 to 12 hours a day every day. And you can't stop every 300 miles for hours to charge. So how they deal with that will be really fascinating.
It's gotta be the hot swap battery thing that's gonna...
Hot swap is definitely an option, especially because for you start with major thoroughfares, Route 66, you just put them everywhere. But I'm not counting out the idea of they might just put a giant battery brick in it. They might go, look, this is a commercial capital expense. Like, we can prove that these will be cheaper for you over the lifetime of the vehicle, so you will have to spend more money up front to get the range that you want, but the overall cost, because per mile it's so much cheaper, will be worth it. That might be their argument. We'll see what they do. But they also don't want to stop there. They also want to do transportation. They want to build buses. And the other nice part about buses, and this is kind of cool because there was a related article that Mercedes tried out there first. They built a self-driving bus that drove itself around. Is it Berlin, I think? One of your German cities, I believe. But the idea here was that it was able to, like, drive around on itself, and in particular types of environments, especially like bus routes where they're highly, regular, there's huge advantages there that you don't necessarily get with, like, consumer cars that are designed to go literally anywhere. Because with consumer cars, they have to learn, they have to figure out where they're going as they go. And whereas with static routes where it's the same route again and again and again, you can get super high detailed maps of routes at like midnight and sit there and go, okay, this is the blank map. Now just small updates over time, we can figure out what things are there that aren't normally there. You can be constantly updating it and getting better sources. And so these can end up being really, really a lot safer and easier to implement full autonomy quickly. That's kind of the argument that Mercedes-Benz is making. And so they did their 20-mile trip, and, you know, which is pretty cool, pretty cool. And Elon's saying, yeah, we should do that too. we're building a bus. And so, again, this is, you got a large thing that you have a large vehicle that can carry a lot of batteries. It drives a lot, but you have the ability to work with the nature of the economics on buses are different than consumer cars. And so it might be an easier sell, especially because they tend to be state owned things. And so, yeah, it'd be pretty cool. But he's also went on to talk about how, like, he wants to get to the point where you don't necessarily have, like, bus drivers for everyone. Obviously, we're talking autonomy here, but like a dispatcher who manages multiple buses and maybe particular sticky spots this thing comes up and remotely. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see their take on this whole thing, but yeah, they want to build a real cool bus.
Yeah, I am less confident about this part of the plan. I definitely see they'll make the semis, and like you said, they're going to have to figure out the battery piece of it. No problem with that whatsoever. I think the solar thing, I don't know why it's on his map.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, it's still part of part one, Elon, but okay. And other than just the only reason why he included it is to clarify why he wants to buy Solar City. I'd be shocked if the bus thing ever happens, just because, well, sorry for the pun, there are so many moving parts with this. That You know, it's one thing to make a battery-operated bus, and that's probably how it's going to start, but to say, oh, we're also going to be able to shrink it down, and we'll do the autonomy thing, I don't know. I just don't see that happening anytime soon whatsoever. But
yeah.
I could be wrong. I just think the last part's going to take over, the last part of his plan, and you just go, why do we have buses at all? I don't understand.
Right. So, that is an interesting point, because the next point goes to autonomy, and every once in a while, the cipher is, as the technology matures, all Tesla vehicles will have the hardware necessary to be fully self-driving with fail-optional capabilities, meaning that any given system in the car could break your car, meaning that any given system in the car could break and your car will still drive itself safely. It is important to emphasize that refinement and validation of the software will take much longer than putting in place the cameras, radar, sonar, and computer hardware. And so he kind of gets into like where they are in the state of deploying the technology, saying that, hey, every car's got it. You're going to have to pay extra for the software. We'll put the hardware in, but the software is not completely done yet. And he also kind of gets into the idea of what the beta is. This is not a beta software in any normal sense of the word. Every release goes through extensive internal validation before it reaches any customers. It is called a beta in order to decrease complacency and indicate that it will continue to improve. Once we get to the point where autopilot is approximately 10 times safer than the U.S. vehicle average, the beta label will be removed. So they put in pretty high bar for, yeah, it's safe and it should be on all the time, but that's their goal, is to get to the point where it's safe and should be used all the time. Like,
yeah, what did you think about his, I thought this was really interesting, this one paragraph where he said, I should add a note here to explain why Tesla is deploying partial autonomy now rather than waiting until some point in the future. Shout out to the bow, Google.
Yeah.
The most important reason is that when used correctly, it is already significantly safer than a person driving by themselves, and it would therefore be morally reprehensible to delay release simply for fear of bad press or some mercantile calculation of legal liability. So he's kind of like, what the heck, Google?
Oh my gosh. I love Tesla, or I love Elon Musk and like the way he pitches arguments so much, because it's like, I'll do this with political arguments every once in a while, where like when my particular like political preference is usually looked at as the one that's like morally apprehensible or like morally deficient, I will strike back and be like no. Not morally deficient, but like I'm being heartless. Like I have like the stricter rules about it. I think we should be strict about this. People are like, okay, You're just being heartless. Well, I'll come back and be like, no, look, the rules need to be followed for X, Y, and Z. And I think you are like, you're complicit in taking advantage of people, and you're a morally reprehensible person. So I really love him like using that same argument. That's so great. Yeah, no, you're a bad person. And honestly, it makes sense to me, because it's like one of the places where with medical research, like we have all sorts of laws that prevent people from using medication that hasn't been fully approved by the FDA, because it's either in human trials or it's only been approved in Europe and whatever. And so we're trying to keep people safe. So there are laws that tried to get passed where we say, okay, if you have a fatal disease, you're going to die because of it, and the doctor approves of the use, you should be able to use these medications that are still under review by the FDA. They haven't been proven to be worse than not using it. There's still a chance, so let's use it. And those laws get knocked down all the time. And you're like, why would you do that? Like, the person's dying. Why not give them the experimental cancer treatment that hasn't been proven to kill you yet? The person's already dying. Like, and I could see where Tesla's coming at this, and they want to, I wonder if they're going to be able to control the narrative enough to, yeah, really hit that point home of, look, this isn't about like get the narrative back on their side. Like, look, this is good for humanity. It's important that we're aggressive and quick about this. And people will die if we don't do this. Yeah, some people will die as a result of doing this, but far, far, far fewer. And what's our moral obligation there? You know? And it's like companies that put out drugs that have, you know, save hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people's lives and occasionally have a bad reaction and kill somebody. Should they not do it because occasionally somebody dies? And at what point is it so safe that you're like, okay, we can go out? So I see what he's saying. I like him. I don't know. I'm gonna if it were somebody else, I might be like, nah. But kind of where this all goes is the idea of sharing. And he sits there and says, look, if we've got if everybody's got a car and they can drive themselves, then they can drive themselves all the time, even when you're not there. And if you look at it from that perspective, we got way too many cars. We have so many cars in the world right now that it's like if they could be driving when you're not using them, they could be servicing other people. So we want to give these cars the ability to make your car the ability to make you money when you're not around. And so basically become a, you know, an autonomous Uber or an autonomous,
right,
autonomous taxi. And so this is where his argument comes into, like, we're not going to need low-cost cars because that will be the low-cost option. It will be cheaper than owning an entire car, and you can still get transportation whenever you need it, and we'll have enough to go around. It'll be pretty awesome.
Yeah, we just got to figure out a way to charge them and maintain them and other stuff, yeah.
Yeah, since most cars are only in use by their owners for 5% to 10% of the day, the fundamental economic utility of a true self-driving car is likely to be several times that of a car which is not. In cities where demand exceeds the supply of customer-owned cars, Tesla will operate its own fleet, ensuring that you can always hail a ride from us no matter where you are. So it's an interesting idea. And so in short, Master Plan Part 2 is create stunning solar roofs with seamlessly integrated battery storage, expand the electric vehicle product line to address all major segments, develop a self-driving capability that is 10 times safer than manual via massive fleet learning, and enable your car to make money for you while you aren't using it. So that's phase two, part two.
Cool.
It is quite cool.
Yeah. He's a visionary, and he knows how to set that vision out there and get people moving in that direction. It's cool.
Yeah, I agree. All right, man.
Going after some big stuff. Big things. So the future is also now.
Yeah.
So turns out first 3D printer's gone into space.
Whoa, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think we talked about this at the beginning of the year, actually. After when I was reading Bold. And he was, that was one of his things. He was like, 3D printing is going to be huge, and specifically huge in space. And I think he's right. And so, yeah, they just got one up there. It's a, who is the name of the company? Made in Space is the name of it. And I love the CEO of it. He's like, space is the final frontier. Psh. So,
or so I'm told.
There you go. Yep. Heard that before. We didn't even talk about that movie. But anyways.
Really good reviews. Star Trek.
Yeah, I want to see it.
I do want to see it. I just haven't seen it yet. So so this is brief aside. My girlfriend is taking the bar next week. Good luck, Diana. And so it's like, we've been on a full stop for doing anything fun. And that's a movie she wants to see. So I gotta wait.
It's cool. That's cool. So this 3D printer has been brought onto the International Space Station, and apparently designing a 3D printer for space is not easy. So it has to be rugged and reliable. It has to be able to be remotely operated, and obviously without the benefit of gravity.
Yeah, man, that's interesting to me.
Yeah, and they had to make it safe for astronauts because, as I'm sure you know, it lets off little particles, and so they had to filter them out. So it actually, like, the little bonus, like, it actually cleans the air of the International Space Station for them, too. So there's that. yeah, they were like, they're making a statement of like, you know, Apollo 13, the movie would be a lot more boring if they had a 3D printer on it. Because like, something exploded. Oh, we'll just 3D print a new one and install it. Sweet.
Yeah, so, that's awesome.
Yeah, there's already a 6-month queue of projects waiting to be manufactured.
Of course. There.
Yeah, they just, yeah, that's how it works. So, yeah, they were like The Martian, too. They were like, man, what if Mark Watney had a 3D printer? So, yeah, pretty exciting. So this is all part of the, you know, if we go to Mars, we got to decide, are we just going to go there, hang out for a bit, and come home, never to visit again for 50 years like you did with the moon? Or are we going to go and are we going to stay? And yeah, if we stay, we got to have some manufacturing ability. So just like out of the book Bold. So pretty exciting.
That's really cool.
In space.
I like it. I like it, James. Yeah,
I'm excited about it.
Yeah. I kind of want, it's funny. I've been using this 3D printer. It's awesome. I printed out a huge gear cluster thing, like clockworks that I designed, and I've been trying it out, and it's,
how's that going, by the way?
It's good. It's good. So
is everything ticking along well?
Well, for the first full clockworks experiment, I actually got a stepper motor that I'm using. And this is the main drive gear that drives the entire clockworks.
Okay. Looks like a little gear.
And I designed it so that it would be a nice slip fit.
Yeah. Is it?
Nope. Like not at all. It's really not fitting, even kind of. So I'm going to have to do some. I'm probably going to try to drill it out, but I haven't had a lot of.
I was going to say, it sounds like you need a Dremel tool.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't had a ton of success at opening these up with drill, so I might have to reprint a new one. But other than that, the rest of the clockworks fits together pretty well. And then, yeah, so hopefully my goal this week is to have my first clockworks working, which will be kind of fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is it going to have a standard tick?
No, of course not. This one is, because it's a stepper motor, I can do customizable ticks and stuff, which will be pretty cool. And this one's like fully customizable. I can try different types of ticks. The next clockworks would be a direct drive clock, and that one's going to have
that'll cost less, right? If you can do a direct drive.
Well, yes and no. This one has this one has like six or seven gears. I think it's 9 total pieces with six separate gears. So it's, you know, it's pretty easy to make, but the motor like needs, you actually need a controller to be able to do it. Like you have to be able to have it, something else will do the timing circuit and, you know, and actually doing the stepping. So there's more circuitry involved. The direct drive one is a lot simpler because you just have a consistent direct drive, but it's going to be like 30 gears with multiple levels. It's a much, much more complex mechanism to actually.
This is why software is eating the world.
Yeah, exactly. So it's
just program it. All right. Interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a fun project to be working on mostly.
Yeah, we'll
see what happens. So, the 3D printer, though, the more I use it, the more I'm sure, yes, this is going to be huge one day, and one day, like, 30 years from now. I really do believe that, and I sit there and I go, there are some things that got to happen, and you need a company that can come in and do just super high level of engineering, get a big engineering team behind it and just have it be nearly perfect and be able to do it on your desk, and something will change at that point. But for now, we're still a ways off. Still very much in the hacker space like the early computers were, but that's okay, because I'm bummed I didn't get to be there for that, so I'm excited to be there for this.
Cool.
What was I going to talk about? Oh, so speaking of manufacturing chips, this was a bad segue. So ARM, the guys who, they're basically an intellectual property firm. But if you've ever heard of ARM chips, it's because you use them all the time. They're a chip design firm that doesn't manufacture or sell any chips. And basically what they do is they design the intellectual property of how a chip should work. And then they license that technology to other companies. Other companies like literally everybody else who makes chips.
Yeah, wow.
Apple has huge licenses with them. NVIDIA does. Qualcomm does. Samsung does. Like everybody else. Anything that isn't Intel almost entirely has some sort of ARM architecture in it. It powers the Internet of Things. It powers all sorts of stuff. It is it's a hugely influential company that does a lot of development. And like I said, they don't actually build anything, which is kind of crazy. And this week they got bought by SoftBank, for $31.4 billion.
Wow.
Which is four times as much money as Microsoft paid for Nokia, close to three times as much as Google's expenditure on Motorola, and literally an order of magnitude more than Palm cost HP to buy. So yeah, it's a pretty bold move by the company to buy them. And everybody's kind of asking why, because SoftBank isn't a technology company. They're not really. Yeah, why would SoftBank buy ARM? And the answer is actually pretty much that. SoftBank is they're like an investment firm. And they do. Let me see. Let me look it up. Let me bring it up on Wikipedia so I don't get this wrong. So the history of the company was originally founded in 1981 as the mobile phone division of Japan Telecom under the name Digital Phone. Am I looking at the right one? They're part of the SoftBank group. Yeah. They're this giant company that just from Japan that owns all sorts of stuff. They're a massive they got $31 billion in pocket change to throw around. They're a big deal. They're a big company. And this is a pretty bold move especially because ARM is such a foundational technology to so many tech companies that if this were competitive anywhere in any way, it would be a problem. Like if Intel bought ARM, that would cause some pretty big waves, and especially it would spur other companies to decide to compete against ARM. Because in a lot of ways, ARM has been the cheap, reliable alternative to Intel, and that's pretty much been its claim to fame. And what's interesting is for SoftBank, their problem is they haven't really had anything that allows them to get into this future of tech and really make a lot of money off of it as the entire industry grows. They don't build phones, they don't build chips, they're not one of these big companies. So this is was a weirdly enough, a very low cost bar to entry, or a low risk, relatively affordable bar to entry, because it's a company that, like I said, they power the iPhone in a lot of ways. So, yeah. You know, it's no joke when you're for what they bought. They bought some pretty incredible intellectual property. And the other nice part is for ARM, they've now got the financial security of an enormous corporate overlord. You know, they've got, you know, which is, it's got its benefit. Just ask Marvel how well it works out when an enormous multinational corporation buys you. It's pretty crazy. Pretty big change.
It's like they realize they're onto something. They beat Intel, and with enough capital, they can get enough more R&D that it's just game over.
Yeah. Exactly. That's a big thing, is that Intel, one of the big differences is that Intel has some great intellectual property, but what they've got that's better than anything else is their ability to, or for decades, their biggest asset was their ability to manufacture stuff. and their foundries. They could just build better chips because they could fit more transistors into the same amount of space, which meant that their chips didn't have to be more efficient. They could just be smaller, and you would get faster and less power consuming by nature of the fact that they were smaller. And that was something that was so dominant that you went with Intel just because they were the best for everything by virtue of the fact that they were smaller. And Intel was very smart in saying, you cannot build anything. Nobody can build anything our foundries, only we can. You have to use our intellectual property. So they owned everything. And it was a really good hegemony that they had. And where ARM really took off was saying, look, we can make chips that are as efficient, as quick, but aren't as small. And then as other companies like the Taiwanese Semiconductor Company and Samsung caught up in the ability to make them small, they've got all the efficiency of ARM now, and it's just, yeah, bad news bears for Intel. You know, especially as Windows doesn't grow at the same rate, which is, you know, the Wintel machine was such a force to be reckoned with between from the, you know, through the 90s and 2000s that, yeah. I know, it's fun to watch this change, and I'm excited to see where this goes. Like you said, it's, you got a company that's really on the rise, and all of a sudden now they have an enormous amount of financial backing, and yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah, they're going for it.
Yeah.
So now that I've moved and I live somewhere here, oh, I didn't know you can see my Eiffel Tower in the background.
I know, that's pretty cool.
Nice. And my printer. I'm totally represented.
Yeah.
Anyways, because of where I live, I'm riding my bike a little more. Like, I rode my bike to church this morning,
nice,
as an example. And the bike I have it's not a total piece of garbage, but it's close. it's ready to be donated, and I'm looking for an upgrade. So I've got my antennas up for new bike stuff, and the Velada is attempting to woo me.
Yeah.
So they're a San Francisco-based company, and they've decided to make the most awesomest teched-out bike in the world. And since I'm kind of on a smart home kick, I'm like, ooh, smart bike. We'll see. Yeah. So this one is awesome. So I've been looking into like e-bikes, and I think where I've ultimately landed on that is, because I'm like, high-tech bike.
Yeah.
Is I could be less lazy and spend the money on other cool stuff on the bike.
Mm.
Does that make sense? Okay, so this thing's sweet. So, first thing that comes with it is a built-in 2.4-inch color screen.
Ooh, I like that.
Okay, just right on the handlebar in the middle section. So that screen, it can be controlled with a thumb joystick integrated into the handlebar.
Nice.
Which is nice. You can page through views of weather, temperature, ride information, turn-by-turn directions, and heart rate info if you're wearing a compatible Bluetooth heart rate monitor like the Apple Watch.
Ooh.
Plus, it will display any push notifications you get.
I like it.
Okay. Also, our built-in automated front and rear lights that turn on when it gets dark and turn off when it lightens, plus an electronic horn so you can honk at people, and and a dynamo hub in the front wheel that charges your battery automatically for you.
Nice.
Okay, so it also has smart security features. Okay, so it has a three-part anti-theft system.
Okay, here it is.
First one has a motion detection that looks for a potential theft, and it triggers an alarm, like a car alarm, plus sends a notification to your smartphone. And if the thief gets away, it is built in GPS for location tracking.
Yeah.
Let's see here. They say that apparently the frame and the geometry design are very comfortable, I guess, to ride. What was the other thing? Let's see. Yeah, like I said, it plays nice with all other phones and stuff. There is potentially one downside.
What is it? Because I'm about to reserve now.
Is about
$3,500. Wait. So this $300 is just for my reservation?
Yes.
Bikes are stupid.
Yeah, I'm just like, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, that is a lot of money.
It looks awesome. And if I had more money that I knew what to do with and already had a television and already had my solar roof and already had my smart garage.
VR system.
Maybe. But
yeah, it's tough. I've seen some pretty cool like electric smart bikes, whatnot, and they're very neat. I'd like one. Heck, I'd like a...
Oh, the other thing that it has, I meant to tell you this, is, besides the disc brakes, which I'm just in love with disc brakes. I don't know. I think they're the coolest thing ever. My next bike will have disc brakes, but they are, what are they? They're, what is it? They're not just disc brake. They're, hydraulic disc brakes. And then they don't have, it doesn't have a chain. It actually uses, it's those rubber things. What are those things called? Usually a belt. It's like a rubber belt.
A belt. Yes.
For it.
A belt.
So it doesn't click. It's nice, smooth. Nice. Ride.
I like that. I had a friend in college. There is one downside to disc brakes. Because disc brakes, like, for those of you who don't know, like, just generally speaking, you know, when you have a bike, like, old school, you have the little clamps that clamp down on the outer rim of the bike. But disc brakes, like, they work just like your car's disc brakes. There's a small disc, and it's got clamps on either side that it can clamp down on the disc on. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more efficient. They last longer. They brake better. Better control. They're just better for the overall, like, experience of braking and riding. But one of the downsides to disc brakes is that they're, like, really good at braking. Really good at braking. And bike wheels aren't designed like car wheels. If a bike wheel stops, but the bike keeps going forward, there's a tremendous amount of torque put on the spokes, and you will literally roll the wheel around the center of the bike and collapse the wheel down. I had a friend who was like a big time biker, and he was going fast, brakes as hard as he could, and I saw the wheel, and it was like it was just all of the spokes that started to wrap around the hub, the thing had like buckled in half. He was like, yeah, it was a pretty rough stop.
Wow, sounds like it.
Yeah, but I know.
Crazy. Ah. But yeah, so I'm not gonna get that bike, but it's pretty awesome. If you guys want me to review it, just send me one.
Exactly. We will tell our entire audience to go and get one. And just $300 down payment. Pretty nice.
Yeah, we'll just focus on that.
You know what you could spend your money on, James, if you had a tremendous amount. I've been figuring out how to say this because I don't want to be mean to Miranda Kerr. Because I don't know why, it just doesn't seem fair. So Miranda Kerr, for those of you, Kerr, I don't know how to say her last name, it doesn't matter. For those of you who don't know, she is a Victoria Secret supermodel.
Can I search for her on...
Yeah.
Is it gonna be okay?
Yeah, you should be able to.
Just want to make sure. Images. Okay, all right. Got it.
Yeah. And
she's pretty.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, when you get to the top of your career, like, you know, your field, no matter where your field is, you're inherently got to be not an idiot. Like, it's not like she's gonna be just some empty-headed nothing. So I don't want to be mean to her, but at the same time, She just got engaged to CEO Evan Spiegel.
And wow.
For those of you who don't recognize right away, that is the CEO of Snapchat and my arch nemesis. And
she was married to Orlando Bloom at one time.
Yeah. So Evan Spiegel is 26. Miranda Kerr is 33, which, you know, make whatever that of you will. She was formerly married to Orlando Bloom and now divorced. Bit of a downgrade in the look department, if you ask me.
Seriously, the guy's a... Okay.
He's a multi-billionaire.
Get it. You don't have to hang out with him.
I know, exactly. I get it. And I just, like, for those of you, like, are new to the show or longtime listeners, I don't like Evan Spiegel. I think he's kind of an idiot. At the very least, he has an insane amount of hubris, and I think it's all going to fall apart on him someday, and I kind of look forward to the feeling of schadenfreude that comes along with that. For whatever reason, this one just amps it up a level, because it's like, who did Bill Gates marry? Was it a supermodel? No.
An engineer.
Who did Steve Jobs marry? Was it a supermodel? No. Who did the Larry Page and Sergey Brin marry? Did they marry? No. No, they didn't marry supermodels. Mark Zuckerberg, who did he marry? No. Nope, not a supermodel. It doesn't matter which of these, like, giant tech CEOs that we talk about, that we like, that we respect, that we focus on. All of these guys married very intelligent women who are partners with them in the field that they work at, and like at one level or another. And, you know, obviously there's, like, you know, you got to find personality tweaks that match, but. A supermodel. He's marrying a super. This is too perfect, James. This is just like, this is such a bad idea. And like, I don't want to call Miranda Kerr a gold digger, because obviously she's not. She's hugely financially successful, but from a financial perspective, she is marrying up quite a bit. And she was married to Orlando Bloom. I'm just wondering, like, maybe Evan Spiegel is a really engaging guy and really, like, in person, you just...
Are you kidding
me? I know, but nobody ever says it. Nobody ever says it about him. Nobody ever says, oh, he's just such a great guy. He's got real magnetism. You can't avoid liking him. Like, nobody says that. He's got Snapchat. That's what he's got.
He's an artist.
I know. The nicest thing people say is that he's an artist. I'm just like, he's not even like a good artist. What is, oh, I love this. I love this. I saw this and I got so excited. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is going to be years of delight. Like, I feel bad for, like, looking forward to the disaster of this, because it just ratchets up, like, how bad it's going to be when Snapchat finally starts to tumble. And somebody who still believes that it's inevitable, his comeuppance is going to be that much bigger. And I'm like, I'm so excited. I'm so excited. And my only twinge of guilt in being excited about this is I don't feel like I have no reason to dislike Miranda Kerr. And so I don't want to, I don't wish bad on her necessarily. This is great, James. This is so good. This is just from a drama perspective. This couldn't be any better. I'm so excited about it. I'm just... Because it just... I guess part of my thing is, like, it just shows you what kind of a guy Evan Spiegel is. Like, when you compare him and contrast him to all the other guys that are in this field, that are affecting change, what they're focused on, what they're doing, and they all married people that they knew... That weren't affected necessarily by the great wealth. They were there before the great wealth. They were there, like, you know, in or if they weren't, like with Jobs, well, she was there before the great wealth, because she was there before he returned to Apple. Like, they all got married to people that loved them just when they were pretty successful, when they were, you know, up and coming, and there was still risk, and there wasn't giant investors and huge, you know, huge dividends and everything. Like,
well, with someone, like you said, they could have a conversation, hold their own, and we're also totally managing the household.
Exactly.
And I think, I don't know about Melinda, but yeah.
Yeah, it's just,
I don't know.
I just don't. Yeah, I was going to say,
well, it's right up there with, I don't know, him and I don't know, the guy, he's suspended for like 4 games now. Brady, yeah. Right? He's another, he's a guy we all love.
Well, the thing with Brady, and like the reason why it makes more sense is they're both basically TV stars. That's what they do. Like, yeah, I get it, you're married like to a supermodel, but you could kind of see that to either one of them.
And physically, yeah, you're like, you have to be your peak to do their thing.
Exactly.
Like, okay, I get it.
And they're entertainers. Like, they have the same business. They're very well financially matched in that she makes more than him depending on the year. Like, that at least makes sense from a, like, okay, I could see how that works perspective. Whereas this one doesn't have that feel. And we're missing something here. There's a piece.
Yeah, no, it's very much like you get the sense like she's making a calculated risk here.
Yeah, yeah. This is see, that was almost makes me respect her more because she recognizes that she's 33 and she's only got a little bit more time. Even if she stays like really pretty, her returns on how much she can make doing what she does goes down from here.
Well, yeah, she hasn't turned it into an acting career,
right?
Which would be the very next move,
right?
And
or a business line or anything else. There's,
yeah.
How do you keep that lifestyle going? Well, there's a couple of different ways. One of them is marrying a really young tech billionaire who doesn't know any better and is kind of a doofus.
He's infatuated.
You got really lucky.
Yes.
Yeah. So I just.
You're so mean.
I love this. I love it. I've focused on it a lot in the show, and I feel like we should move on to something else. Another recent billionaire. Because it's probably.
Yeah.
So this has been a big one. It's a company we've talked about before because they have really super creative online advertising. The Dollar Shave Club, they got bought this week for $1 billion.
Unbelievable.
I know. They got bought by Unilever. So, for those of you who don't know, I don't know how you can listen to the show and not know what the Dollar Shave Club is. Their whole deal was, you'd pay $1 a month, and you'd get a bunch of razors that you could shave with. And so you'd always have a fresh razor for really cheap prices.
Is that how it is? Is it $1 a month?
Or is it $1 a blade? I can't remember.
I should probably look this up. Dollar.
How do we? Wow.
ShaveClub.com.
I just chastised people for not knowing what this company does, and then show that I don't actually know what this company does. It's terrible.
Well, what is it? Our products. It has a new flag. So their products are new, or they have a new update. Let's see here. Try blades. Okay, so for $1 a month plus $2 shipping handling, that's a $3 club, just for the record. You get their basic shaver for guys who dig simplicity and precision. 2 stainless steel blades, 5 cartridges per month. It's reliable, and it has a lubricating strip that smooths the skin.
Nice.
For $6 a month, you get the 4X, which is better.
Got 4 blades.
And then for $9 a month, which ships for free, by the way. The 4X, by the way, also ships for free. The Executive is what it's called. Oh. It's the Final Frontier. It's like a personal assistant for your face.
It's got
6 stainless steel blades.
It's got so many blades. Look at
it's got a special trimmer edge built for the professional. I don't even know
this thing
means.
Has got so many blades, James, that under normal resolution on my screen, I can't see all of the different blades that kind of blend into it. It's a lot of blades, man. It's a lot of blades.
You can also get shave butter and post-shave cream. Plus, they have soap, apparently, and a body cleanser. Plus, you can get hair pomade.
Ooh.
I don't know what that is.
It's stuff for
your, it tames nature's wild.
It's stuff for your hair, man. It's how you shape your hair. It's hair product. No, it's better than gel. Gel hardens. Pomade tends to not harden like that. There's like, you got it, man.
Well, if I just don't use shampoo for a while, I get that.
Yeah, honestly, like Dapper Dan's pomade from, what's it called? Not No Country for Old Men. That's a totally different movie. I can't believe I can't remember the name of this movie. Keep talking while I look this up.
All right. Then there's a daily face moisturizer with sunscreen and a good shake hand cream. Ooh, I'm interested in that. Plus, fresh peppermint tingling flushable butt wipes for men.
Oh, brother, where art thou? That's what I was thinking. Completely different tone from No Country for Old Men.
Yes. So anyways, Dollar Shave Club.
Yeah, they got bought for $1 billion. Pretty good. Pretty good. I did read a really interesting article that kind of from by TechCrunch where they talk about, so what's the deal? Why did Unilever just spend $1 billion on a company that all they
do? Unilever does soaps and other
All sorts of stuff. They're a giant conglomerate like 3G and other stuff like that. Basically, what the argument here is like, why this is a really easy model to replicate. Why would you spend $1 billion on this company? It's not like they've radicalized technology. All they're doing is buying blades really cheaply and setting up a subscription with a smaller margin than what Gillette gets. And basically, the argument is that it is an innovation, and a lot of these giant conglomerates, they don't innovate anymore, especially outside of the tech industry. And so effectively what's occurring, and we're seeing more and more of this as time goes on, are these giant companies pretty much outsource innovation. Like, it's really common in the medical device field and medical field in general, whether it's pharmaceuticals or whatnot. But you get these startups that'll get a bunch of money that develop a product, and by the time they're ready to go to market, they get bought by a bigger company who gets bought by a bigger company who gets bought by Roche. And they have this. And then once you get part of the bigger company, they cut out all the R&D. They get rid of all of the, they cut costs by using the economics of scale that they've got going for them to do that, and getting rid of all your redundancies and everything, and then they basically just own your brand and whatever intellectual property came along with you. And you know, for Unilever, the big thing for them is going to be keeping the brand up, because that's what they bought. They bought $1 billion brand, and you know, there's going to be a real temptation to cut costs by going even cheaper on blades, which it can't go much cheaper, and not keeping up with the clever ad campaign that has really got them their success in a lot of ways. So you know, got to do that. The other interesting part about this is that somebody pointed out was like, look at the value of good videos. If you're a tech company, or you know, you're trying to make a YouTube video, or you've got a podcast or whatever, like, don't underestimate the value of a really good viral video. Like, that can help build a billion-dollar empire. Yeah, because that's so true. Like, in so many ways, that first video was what set them apart. You know, yeah, they had a good service that was reliable and cheap. Like, that was there. But like I said, it's not like this is crazy innovative. What, like, in so many ways, absolutely critical part of their success has been a really sticky, interesting video. So I don't know. It's cool. Something to think about. If you have some sort of a podcast that you're trying to get a bigger audience for example.
Yeah. Huh. Super interesting. Well, you're clearly not shaving right now.
I gotta shave the neck still.
Anything.
I've gone straight razor, man. I do the replaceable blade on the straight razor, but it's like I pay $10 and get 40 blades, and each blade can be snapped in half. So I get 20 blades and each blade can be snapped in half, and I shave like once a week. So I literally for $10 get a year's supply of razors, which I guess is the same. I'm gonna think about it.
That is kind of the same rate. Well, that's not true. There's just $2 shipping in hand.
Yeah, it's a $3. So, okay, I'm...
a third. Less than a cost third.
Savings. Well, it's funny because I remember I walked into the Art of Shaving.
Unbelievable.
I'm like, it's a good shave, and I buy the more expensive of their blades. Real big spender here, but I was talking to one of their sales guys, and I was like, yeah, actually, like, part of the deal here is nice is that, you know, it's, I guess you get to save a bit of money, you know, kind of keep my prices down. And he looked at me sideways and he said, you're talking about putting a razor sharp piece of metal to your face, and your biggest selling point is that you get to save money. Interesting. I was like, wait a second. He's like, yeah, maybe you should, you know, maybe consider spending a little bit extra since you're literally putting a knife to your face. Get something that's, you know, worth the money. I was like, it's not a terrible argument if you're going to make an argument. Of everything that you should be willing to spend money on, yeah, not going cheap on your face is probably should be up there.
Suppose. Yeah.
The problem is,
I would love to have a professional shave. I don't even know what that sounds like or what that means, but, or maybe I should just watch some YouTube videos and, like, here's how to.
It's hard to get a professional shave in America because you need a barbering. You need to be a barber master. Like, in order to legally be able to do it in America, you have to have, like,
wow,
thousands of hours of work experience and stuff as a barber, and so very few people can do it, but the Art of Shaving hires people, so not all locations have it, but usually they'll, like, they can do shaves, or you can just go to England and they'll shave you for free, or not for free, but they'll pretty much everybody will give you a straight razor there. It's pretty cool. I've done that. I got a haircut and I got my beard cleaned up, and he was like really confused because it turns out nobody had, especially at the time, nobody had a beard. I was like, yeah, just clean it up like along the edges and just like the neck and the cheeks. He was like, wait, so you want me to cut off your beard? I was like, no, just
no.
He's like, it was like, yeah, like right where the hairline ends. Just, he's like, okay, I'll try. It's like, don't say that. It makes me really nervous.
Okay, I'll try.
He did a good job. I liked it, but it was.
Oh, that's funny. All right, I gotta go to England. Actually, for whatever reason, I was just talking to somebody who had an English accent, and Jesse's awesome at accents. So I was like, man, we gotta figure this out. We gotta go. Yeah. You and me, ditch the kid.
You know, honestly, I think you could, if you were doing it on purpose, which would annoy all of your friends back in America, but if you were doing it on purpose, I'll bet you, like, if you lived there for a month, you could do a full English accent.
Yeah.
Because I've not spent much time there on a regular basis, and I can do a lot of the words individually. I can say it like they say it, and...
Yeah, Jessie's like, she just needs to be there for like half an hour.
Yeah, that's a skill I'm jealous of. I can't do accents like that.
We'll just listen to we'll watch a movie.
Yes,
or something.
Yeah, she's already like, jeez, I'm jealous of that. I gotta be in it for a little bit to be able to get the accent at all.
She, what was she doing the other day? Oh, it was this dude. It's okay. This is funny. So, as you know, Google created DeepMind, which was able to play Go.
Yes.
So I was talking about it, downloaded it from my phone, and taught Jesse how to play Go so that we could play against each other.
Nice.
Super fun, super easy, and it was all, you know, relevant and stuff.
Well, super easy. Just every master Go player out there is like, what?
Well, it's easy to get started, there we go. You know, and get the concept. Yeah, to master it's a different level. Anyways, so yeah, steps like checkers, yeah, right? Exactly. So, anyways, so how about this for cross-cultural, like, what just happened here? Jesse was doing an art camp where they were doing, it was like Japanese art stuff.
Okay, haiku, I get it.
And so they decided to have one of the art things or sessions be learning how to play Go.
Mm.
And I was like, isn't it Chinese? Yeah. and she was like, maybe, but it's popular in Japan too.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, fair enough. And I'm like, this is so American culture of us. But the best part is, it's the guy who was teaching it, Russian. And has this big, thick, awesome Russian accent. And he is like, he is a Go enthusiast.
Yeah.
He's like, do you play Go? Let's play Go. We play Wednesday mornings, 5 a.m. We meet at this one place. We'll play
Go. Does anybody ask him Pokemon Go or?
Oh, dude, I totally should. But anyways, he would speak, and Jessie, she was telling me about him and like and how he talked, and she was doing the Russian accent. It was pretty good. And then I met him afterwards, and I was like, dang, Jess, that's. You were right.
No.
You nailed it. Yeah, she's got that skill.
I'm jealous of that ability. I'd love to be. If I could do good at, if I could do accents good, I would. I would do them incessantly. I would go to bars. I would visit. You have no idea what country I was from.
That would be fun.
I would. It would be like my go-to. I'd never speak in an American accent if I could do.
That'd be
if I could switch between the accents quickly and easily.
That would be cool. That would be cool. Okay. I want to bring this back to the tech scene, if that's possible. Just a few more. The first one, there was a fun BBC article that's talking about the going to space.
Ooh.
And like just some of that, just real quick, just want to give you like a, here are the current ways at which we can travel. So April 4th, 2063 is a day that everybody is really looking forward to. Probably not quite as much as what people were looking forward to for Back to the Future, but there's going to be some parties in 2063 because that is the day that Zefren Cochrane successfully tested the warp drive.
Ooh.
So they're kind of like
a big deal about that when it finally gets here. 63?
Yeah.
That's 50 years from now?
Yeah.
Okay, hopefully my liver's still kicking by then. Okay.
So scientists are doing what they can to make sure that that will be successful and the Vulcans actually show
nice.
Up.
Nice.
And so there are different technology things. So right now the Voyager 1 is the furthest thing, object, man-made thing from Earth in space and is currently traveling at 17 kilometers per second. Which is awesome, but they're also like, man, it needs to go faster. Needs to go faster. So, one of them that people like Stephen Hawking really like is what's called a solar sail.
Yes.
So, they're giant mirrored sheets that are pushed along by a force of photons, from the sun. And it's kind of cool. And one of the ideas is we literally like shoot lasers from Earth to it to help propel it along or from satellites that are in orbit. And so that's kind of cool. Another one is the possibility of using a propulsion system that resembles a giant broken umbrella or a wiry jellyfish, essentially. And so it's known as an e-sail. And essentially, there's a space probe positioned at the center of a fan of metal wires. But instead of it being pushed by the protons, it uses the power of solar wind. Mm. So what happens is this broken umbrella thing is positively charged. And then the solar wind is also positively charged. And so it was kind of like trying to put two magnets next to each other. You know, they push away.
Yeah.
Like, essentially, it would be doing that and then pushing this thing.
Nice.
Into space. They say it can get up to 400 kilometers per second.
Nice. That's fast.
Which is three times faster than a solar sail.
Right. That's awesome.
There are a couple problems with that.
Of course.
Like one or two that they're working through. I'll have to tell you one of the quotes in here, which I'm like, this is so classic. Number one, they're like, the wires need to be pretty strong and high quality, and they're not at this point. And so they're like, yeah, if some space dust hits it, it would probably break, and that would be a problem. So we have to overcome that.
Something like that, yeah, okay. Like,
okay. The other interesting one is that they don't... it says most of the energy that comes out of the sun is light, and so the total force across a solar sail is roughly equivalent to the gravitational force of a chocolate bar on a football field. And the force of solar wind is 1,000 times smaller than that. Mm. So a solar sail might have to be a few hundred meters across, whereas this broken umbrella thing would have to be 40 kilometers in diameter. So they're just like, yeah, we're not quite there yet, essentially. But I did love this one quote. Oh my gosh, yes, I love it. So they're talking about how they're trying to prove the technology, and they're studying the physics so we know how much propulsive force the solar one will produce. Then he says this, I love this. Everything has to start someplace. I'm very excited. If we can prove the physics, then it's just an engineering challenge.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's all that it is.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, it's some, that, there's something to it. I don't know. It's... Yeah.
So, all that to say, like, so we're doing 3D printers, and we're figuring out ways to try to travel faster, and it's all good.
I like it.
It's exciting.
I like it. So, you know what we won't be doing, but even sooner than that, James, there's some stuff going on. Mark, so this is a big week for big tech leaders talking, doing stuff. Elon Musk talked about what he wants to do for the next decade. Mark Zuckerberg talked about what he wants to do for the next decade. Evan Spiegel made a mistake. They're all really living up to their potential. But here's what Mark Zuckerberg had to say. Zuckerberg, so he had this big talk, and there's a big old long article that we'll link to. I'm going to give you the summary. The key point and the one thing you really need to accept to understand where Facebook is going is that Zuckerberg sees internet access as key to making the company and society stronger. So a lot of the different stuff that they're doing, like all these drones and stuff, like it's all about getting the internet out there. That's the big thing. That's the next phase. And it's not a moonshot. Like with Google, you know, the Project Loon is a moonshot. It's something long-term, big project. And if they can do it, great. They figure they can. But whereas it sounds like with Zuckerberg and Facebook, no, internet access, pioneering internet access for everybody all the time. That's the one thing they're trying to do. They don't look at it as a moonshot. They look at it as a necessary extension of what they have to do. And as a result, they're saying, like, you know, building giant infrastructure projects like wired internet everywhere is just not an option with the number of people out there and the number of space you've got to cover. So they have to look at really unorthodox solutions like your internet connected drones. If you want to connect these 1.6 billion people who don't have a network, it can't be the same solution today that aren't affordable for telcos, which is interesting. So like, it's kind of exciting because you will see more projects like that coming out of Facebook. They had like they're promoting 5G internet. They did like internet connected wireless hotspots a couple of weeks ago that we didn't talk about, but you're going to see more and more stuff like that coming out of Facebook, where they really want to not necessarily be a telecom, but they want to really push that further than it's been pushed. That being said, a lot of this technology that they're designing, Facebook doesn't want to be the ones that are building it. They want to, what we want to do is prove that this works and then figure out a way to license the technology or just give it away. And communication companies, governments, nonprofits can then go from there and they can really push out the implementation, you know, which I think is pretty smart because, you know, it's great. As big and awesome as Facebook is, that's an awful lot of money in infrastructure. Even if you come up with really low cost, creative, innovative solutions, it'd still be hard for a single company to do that, and maybe a bad idea in the long run. So, I don't know. It sounds cool. I like it. I like that vision, and I like the fact that they're aware enough to say this is super important, but it's also super important to get other people involved in this project if we're going to succeed. Yeah, and he also said, he said this, it's not something you necessarily expect Facebook to do because we're not an aerospace company, but I guess we're becoming one, which is kind of a cool response to that. And it honestly, like, you know, wow. as a guy who looks around for jobs every once in a while, that I definitely get that feeling looking at Facebook's job boards, especially if you're not looking at software. If you're looking at anything mechatronics, mechanical engineering type like area, anything that actually where you build a physical object, like all of their job postings are, yeah, so you got to work with something that flies. Like it's going to be up in the air. That's what we're doing right now. Drones, planes, kites, you know, satellites, whatever. Just be on board with that. So they, that's a big thing. That being said, parallel to that, Facebook is working on the next generation of things for people to do over the internet. And Zuckerberg sees virtual and augmented reality as the future, establishing a new major computer paradigm that will be more natural than using our phones, which I think is true personally. But it also leads me to double down on my statement earlier of the idea that I think this version of the Oculus won't have great support in 5 years. I think even in 2 or 3 years, I think they're really going to be pushing forward to do the best technology and be pushing that market forward and let other people cover the long tail. They're going to want to be on the bleeding edge, even at the cost of supporting legacy equipment, is my guess.
Huh.
And
interesting.
That being said, they definitely think VR is where they're going to stay focused for the next time. It'll likely be 5 to 10 years before we have an AR device that does for augmented reality what the Oculus Rift is doing for virtual reality today. And I'm glad to hear him say that, because you know for a fact that Magic Leap, those VR dweebs that I'm telling you are overvalued and they're not going to work out. Clearly Mark Zuckerberg agrees with me, because you know he was invited to invest in them and you know he didn't. and I'm feeling good about that. The fact that, because that was honestly my biggest, like the biggest reason why I didn't want to predict that they're a complete sham of a company, is because I was like, I didn't know any major tech company that was betting against them. This is the first sign that you got somebody that's like out and proud. No, I don't think that's going to work. Like, he's tried the Microsoft's device. He's tried, or he's been shown the Magic Leap. Like, he thinks VR is the solution in the interim. That AR is a big deal, but it's not there yet. So I'm excited to see what Magic Leap tries to do with that. And so he does the big ones. There's something about a robot toaster that I evidently skipped that part of the larger article, but he's got a robot toaster in his house because, if you remember, months and months back, it was announced that he was developing a neural network to control an AI to control his home, and it's kind of his own project that he was working on. It
just kind of
in
awesome.
His free time, I guess, that he it. Has with his marathon training, wife, new baby, and multinational, multi-billionaire, billion-dollar company that he runs.
Those guys are crazy. Makes me feel like a slacker.
I know.
I'm just trying to set up home care.
Yeah, right.
Get my lights to work.
I was gonna say, you know what the nice part is, James? Yours probably works. And you feel like it doesn't work, but compared to his, I'll bet yours he's either getting a lot more help than he's willing to admit, or he's sitting there going, these problems are so annoying. Somebody has to come up with a better solution.
Oh man. Yeah. You know, does get me thinking. It's he sees it too. Right. And I think he was talking about Alexa and he's like, yeah, that's a cool thing. I'm like, I'm totally with you there. Do some of the augmented reality, the interactive kitchen, man, I would love to do that. There's nothing right now. Well, I take that back. You can buy a $5,000 refrigerator that has a big...
That seems like a pretty good deal.
...screen on it that displays calendars and messages, I guess. That's like you can do your shopping list on it. That's neat. I don't know. I don't know. The interactive kitchen thing is interesting, but also limited. I'm just going to go inductions cooktop. Start with that. And because that sounds techie enough for me.
And then you can get one of my little tiny Wi-Fi enabled chips and integrate it yourself. And that'd be good.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. What, like, send me notifications?
Or it's everything, man. You can control with it. You can get information from it. It's Wi-Fi connected. Turn it off. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty nice. I'd be totally honest with you, James. I bought them with the intention of figuring out what to do with them. I haven't... So I'm still... And I got them...
I want to create a magic mirror. That's on my list. Because that still sounds awesome.
That does sound awesome. That's probably going to require a Raspberry Pi. But those cost like $40 if you want the expensive ones.
I don't... I just want... I want it to have some sort of hand gesture. Voice control would be nice too, but I'm already like, I think if I just do a display that turns on when it notices somebody, that's probably good enough.
That'd be pretty cool.
I would still feel a bit like, this is ugly.
Yeah, I feel that. But, so, okay, can I do the last three stories rapid fire?
Rapid fire, yes.
Okay, so number one, the first like FAA approved drone deliveries by a company happened the other day, and it was 7-Eleven delivering food and Slurpees, which is phenomenal. As a huge fan of Slurpees, I'm really looking forward to this.
Hilarious.
They piqued my interest. So that was really, it's just an interesting, you know, check one off for drone deliveries. And then in the realm of artificial intelligence and machine learning, Google went through and taught one of their AIs how to recognize text box in comic books. So that, because they have like a comic book app that's pretty good, but in order to read the text, you'd have to zoom in on smaller screens and stuff, and it was driving people nuts. So they taught the AI to go through, recognize text boxes so that they can just, you can like click through it and it'll automatically magnify just the text box. So you don't lose your space, your place in the comic, where it's like what frame you're on and everything. And they taught a AI how to read a comic book so that it can assist you in reading it, which I think is really cool and clever.
Nice.
And sort of like illustrating what this sort of technology can be good for over the next couple of years and where we're going with it and how it can, you know, be implemented in practical ways into just modern day apps and stuff. And then also they set DeepMind that we talked about earlier, the Go plane AI, loose on their air conditioning, all of their what's it called, climate control for all of their server farms, and they were managed to get a 15% reduction in overall power savings, says Google, which is enormous. Because huge amount of money and energy that they spend on this stuff. And basically they just gave it control over all the climate control stuff, AC, heating, fans for all the racks, different heat pumps, all sorts of stuff, because they have all different things that they can fuss with in order to keep the server racks at the right temperature. And yeah, I guess it was able to just get a ton of data from a ton of different sources, and it would give them a huge drop in overall cost by giving them huge efficiency spike. So that's pretty cool, just in like the future of what you can do with these things, where, you know, throw an AI at it, just let it figure out how to do it better. Cool, very cool, liked it, and that's it.
Cool. That's awesome, man. I just every week we read this thing, this stuff, and I just get excited for the future.
I know, me too.
It's cool, man. Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, that's all we got.
It's awesome.
So, everybody, thanks for joining us, and thank you so much for listening to episode 252. We really do appreciate it. Let's see, three things before we let you go. The first thing is that you can get all the show notes at furloughbros.com/252. And if you want the show notes sent directly to you, you can sign up on that same page to get them as emails. Then finally, this podcast is supported by listeners just like you. And we're super grateful for that. And if you would also like to become a patron, you can find out all the details at furloughbros.com. I am James Furlow. Okay, I don't even kind of remember.
Justice League.
So what?
Comic-Con?
Comic-Con, that's right. That's right. Justice League, that's what you said. Okay, I was like, what? I don't understand. Yeah, so I am James Furlow. My comically funny brother is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time.